Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast to thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today to talk about the Lego Batman movie and John Wick Chapter 2, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello, hello.
Hello. And because of a scheduling conflict, Bill Graham will not be here today to fill his shoes. We have the man, the myth, the legend, our benevolent Lord and Master, Jordan.
John Wick?
John Wick.
Jordan Ralph.
The second best thing. I'm here. Thank you guys for having me.
Jordan, you live in New York City, so I can only assume that you too are an international assassin of great skill and ability.
Yep, I come from a long line.
That's what I thought. Here's a quick story to start us off. For 5 years, I have worked for the Film Stage. And for most of those 5 years, every time I'm in New York, which is 2 to 3 times a year, I have tried to see Jordan Raup and hang out with him and just, like, see the human being behind the voice. And after years of failed attempts and near misses, it finally happened when we went and saw John Wick Chapter 2 with my wife somewhere in Brooklyn.
Yes.
It was amazing.
There's photographic proof, too,
there
if
is.
People don't believe you.
It's crazy.
You follow me on Instagram.
And
if you're out.
And if there's one thing, non-spoiler, that we can learn from the movie John Wick Chapter 2, it's that the entirety of New York City is an assassin. So walking out of that theater was quite an experience. It was.
Yeah, especially the subway ride home for me, at least.
I was about to say,
boy.
I at least was ensconced in a car with my wife. You had to sit among the assassination rabble, so I don't know how you handled that, but good to
I'm
see
alive.
You're still
That's all
alive.
I can say. I can't tell you how many times I was stabbed, but I'm alive.
All right, so
you
we
just
have...
hold it there, Jordan.
We have quite a double bill today. We are going to be doing Lego Batman for 10 to 15 minutes, and then we're going to launch into our full review of John Wick Chapter 2, and that'll take up the bulk of our time. So, it's a family-friendly movie about Batman, a comic book character, and a hyper-violent story of assassins and stabbings and gunshots. So, perfect for every age group. Before we get into that, let me remind people, you can find us on Twitter, at Film Stage Show. You can find us on Facebook, search for The Film Stage Show. And, of course, you can email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. And apparently we're also on Tumblr, where Jordan Raup tells me that we are insanely popular. So, that was weird to find out. But hey, if you got Tumblr, check us out. I don't know how really? Tumblr works. So
blog.thefilmstageshow.com.
All right. Sweet. You could also find us on iTunes where you can give us a comment and a rating, which we always greatly enjoy. And as always, we are brought to you by the fine, very attractive folks over at Mubi. Mubi is the streaming online cinema that utilizes curators to select new films every day for you, the fine people at home, to watch. The way that it works is every day, Mubi adds a new film and you have 30 days to watch it. And after that 30 days, it's gone. So there are always 30 great films for you to choose from. And one of those films that they have coming soon is called Black Sunday. And the copy for this just makes it sound amazing.
Is that Bava?
Yes.
Mario Bava? Yeah, that one's great.
A wild card Italian genre maestro, Mario Bava, is perhaps best known for this horror film early in his career. But the real star is unpredictable actress Barbara Steele. If that doesn't make you want to watch that movie, I don't know what will. I am looking forward to watching it. And remember that Mubi now has a Roku app that is beautifully designed, unlike most other streaming video service apps, Amazon. And you can also watch it directly on your Roku TV now.
So they also have Aki Kaurismäki's new film, and his next film is, or his last film, but his new film's premiering at Berlin in a matter of days. So,
Wow.
Lights in the Dark, Lights in the Dusk, his 2006 film.
Wonderful. And yeah, so all you have to do to get your free 30-day trial, that is the entire life cycle of one movie selection, is go to MUBI.com/filmstage, and you can get a free 30-day trial of Mubi so that you too can understand the wonder. All right, that is it for that. Gentlemen, you both watched the Lego Batman movie. I did not. So after we do this trailer here, you all can get into that, and I will sit quietly on the sidelines and interject now and then. Here is the trailer for the Lego Batman movie.
Computer, how do I put the Joker in Arkham Asylum? Quickest route, no freeways. Computer, do you hear me?
Hello, Master Bruce. I have just taken away your computer privileges.
Gasp!
Sir, it's time for you to stop this unhealthy behavior. You can't spend the rest of your life alone, dressed in black, and staying up all night.
Good night, Alfred.
Sir, it's morning. You need to take responsibility for your life, and it starts by raising your son.
I'm sorry. I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
The young orphan you adopted.
All right, so that is the trailer for the Lego Batman movie. A movie that I literally had no idea what the plot was until I actually saw that trailer while looking this up earlier today. This, of course, is... I don't know how to describe it. It is a spin-off from the Lego movie, which came out a couple years ago. And it is directed by Chris McKay, and it is written by Seth Graham Smith and Chris McKenna, among others. There are apparently...
There's like six screenwriters on this thing.
I was about to say. IMDb lists those two and then says eight more credits, which is a horrifying amount of writers for a single film. Usually... a sign of an abysmal mess. Let's see how this movie actually is. Let's kick it off with our guest for today, benevolent Lord and Master Jordan Raup.
All right. Well, twist, it's not an abysmal mess. I will say, I mean, if you've seen the Lego movie, you know kind of the hyper kinetic, a joke a second kind of style. And Chris Miller and Philip Lord, who are executive producers here, or actually I think they're just producers, brought to the Lego movie, and that same exact style is utilized here, albeit with the probably the standout character or one of the standout characters from the Lego movie, the Will Arnett's Batman. And like Brian, I was kind of unsure what this, if there would be an actual story, or what would actually be, you know, consisting of a 90-minute movie, or actually almost 2-hour movie of what, you know, of just this character. But I will say, at least for the first half, I think they do kind of have it's a really interesting, funny depiction of the character, and probably one of my favorites of the actual character. But I think it kind of, you know, wears out its welcome by the second half, and kind of, like the worst parts of the Lego movie, just kind of throws a million things at the screen. You know, this is a WB film, so you shouldn't be surprised to see WB characters from various other franchises, and I won't spoil anything that pops up, but you know, by the third or fourth or fifth time that happens, it's just kind of exhausting, and nothing is as funny or interesting as the relationship between Batman and the Joker, but yet they try to pack in a ton more characters, and it just kind of doesn't work as well as when it's down to the basics. I mean, literally the funniest scenes for me were the extended shots of Batman just and depicting his loneliness in Wayne Manor. And so when the movie tries to up its scale more and get crazy, I don't think it works nearly as well. So, but still, I mean, I had an enjoyable time. It's funny. It's better than a spinoff to a movie about a toy franchise. should be. So, yeah. That's
all
my
right.
Basic thoughts.
Michael Snydell, what about yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely in the same line of thinking as Jordan in the sense that – but I don't know if I necessarily – only it's definitely that Joker Batman relationship, who's played by Zach Galifianakis in this. That is definitely the most interesting, because it kind of it emphasizes kind of like the pathological isolation of Batman, like throughout over the years and stuff. And that's interesting. But I guess my bigger problem with some of these characters who are sometimes one note, but also kind of interesting. In particular, I found Rosario Dawson was just a little bit underdeveloped, but with just a little more time on screen, I think she could have made just as much of an impact as someone like, I think it's Wildstyle in the original Lego movie.
Yeah.
But I guess what it is, without obviously getting into more specific beats, I think it's very strange how this movie, I think it has a pretty stable foundation, and I kind of like where it ends up, but I feel like this movie kind of skips over the middle. Like it really wants to push some emotional beats that just aren't really there. And so relationships just kind of take jumps from scene to scene. And when you combine that with that like mile a minute comedy, which is like admirable, but also obnoxious. I actually on Twitter, I called this the equivalent of an Andrew W.K. album. And I've been thinking about that. I've been thinking about that a lot. Because it's just like an Andrew W.K. album, you know, it's hyperactive and, you know, it's life affirming. And, you know, there's like a sweetness and a good natured to it. But it's also really, really exhausting by the end, you know, like when you're a kid and you drink too much Mountain Dew and, you know, you have the equivalent of an adolescent hangover the next day. So I guess that's what I'd say about Lego Batman. Like it's not as well developed as Lego Movie, but there again, this finds some surprising depth in not only the Batman franchise, but just in how how these relationships develop. And the one last thing I want to say is sometimes it gave me a headache, but I have to say this movie it's really gorgeous in terms of lighting and in terms of color. Like it almost has this like apocalyptic, but also kind of dingy, but also very beautiful, like lighting and just sense of color that like Lego Movie was also a very like colorful movie, but there's something just very evocative in a lot of scenes in this movie that feels a lot more deliberate and intentional in terms of what's going for tone. So it's I don't think it wholly works, but I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in here, and it's worth a watch.
Okay, I've got to do something right now. Okay, so I'm gonna play a little bit of Andrew WK. I have some questions because, you know, you mentioned that Zach Galifianakis and Rosario Dawson are names in this. There's a shit ton of voice talent in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little intimidating. And honestly, Jenny Slate is Harley Quinn. Jason Mantzoukas is the Scarecrow.
Honestly, a lot of these are like maybe 10 seconds of voice. Screen time, you could say.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that Conan O'Brien as the Riddler wasn't in there for a long time. But then you got like
Doug Benson gets to do a great impression of I believe it's Bane.
Bane, yeah.
Doing.
If anyone listens to his podcast, which I'm an avid listener of, you will get it's a great little in joke because he does that a lot.
Yeah, and it's just Billy Dee Williams is Two-Face, which you know, and just I'm like reading this. And it's insane, and it honestly makes me more interested in the movie, because I just anytime Jason Mantzoukas is in something, I'm on board, because he is just a little bit like the right kind of insane for me. And I like, have you ever listened to him on like anything that he does? He's a madman.
Oh yeah,
he's
I love him.
I love How Did This Get Made.
How Did This Get Made is perfect. Him as what's his name? Rafi in The League. He's a or
is Parks and Recreation as
I will say I didn't
maker.
Even register him in this movie though, unfortunately. Did you, Michael?
No, I didn't know Jason Mantzoukas, but I did stay for the credits and I was like, oh shit, this many people were in this movie?
No.
It's definitely some whiplash.
Michael Cera, I think, is actually great as Robin.
Yeah.
You know what's weird? Siri is credited.
Yeah, there's like a little in-joke where you can now, if you have an iPhone, you can like ask it things and say like pewter, as Batman calls it, and it'll respond with like Batman jokes.
Wait, it really will?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Wait, I'm gonna this might not work, but I'm gonna try it out.
Say like hey pewter.
Hey pewter. Sorry, I didn't get that. Hold on, I'm gonna try again. Hey pewter. Welcome home, sir. I have your rom-coms queued up. Sorted. Okay, I don't think it's working for me.
No, but, that's right.
Well, because it said...
That's related to the movie.
When it said pewter, it spelled it out P-E-W-T-E-R, so I don't... Is that really what it does in the movie?
Well, did they just say something about romantic comedies?
Yeah, rom-com sorted by decade.
Yeah, that's an in-joke.
So that's from the movie. That worked. All right. Sweet. I should note that for anyone who can hear, I do have my Siri set for an Australian accent, and I refuse to apologize. So just going on, like I had no interest in this movie. Is this the type of thing where like I will want to throw it on when it's on HBO, or should I go out and see this? Like,
I would say the level of detail, like Michael said, was pretty amazing to witness, but for me, like the story is just not there enough to like wholeheartedly recommend it. But yeah, HBO for sure. Actually at home, it might be more interesting, cause there's definitely moments where I'm like wishing I could pause it to see. Like
in jokes and psych gags.
All, I mean, literally all the backgrounds are so detailed with different signage and stuff that I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that just flies by.
This is the, when it gets a home video release, I follow the Batman 66 Labels account on Twitter. For anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's a Twitter account that just tweets out pictures of all the labels in the old Adam West Batman series. And it is surprisingly funny and engrossing. So hopefully they will have like a special month where they can go through and do all that from the Lego Batman movie. All right. Any other things to say about this before we move on?
Jordan, do you, without getting into spoilers, do you kind of agree with how it jumps?
Yes. Yeah, it for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how much I want to say, but yeah. I guess for me, it's like this... I mean, we only have literally two Lego movies, and there's another sequel coming, or another spinoff coming in September. And then another Lego movie, Ninjago. Yeah, and then there's another Lego movie sequel, and I would assume, based on the success of this movie, there'll be another one. So, I think, you know, they detail these worlds enough, and the animation's pretty incredible that I would watch more, but I'm just scared that it's going to get exhausting, by next year.
I will be completely honest. The trailers look exhausting just from a visual level. My eyes hurt because I'm an old man now.
I would like to see them focus a little bit more. You know, maybe 8 screenwriters is just, you know, maybe bring it down to 6 or 5.
With each new film, they'll work their way up to 1.
Jeez. It'll be like the Lemonade of movies.
Well, that was the number one movie of the last weekend, the Lego Batman movie. Let's now segue into talking about the number 3 movie of last weekend, and that is John Wick Chapter 2. This is the sequel to 2014's John Wick, which stars Keanu Reeves as a retired hitman who in that movie gets back into action to avenge the death of his dog. So, here is the trailer.
Welcome to Rome. Is this a formal event or a social affair?
Social.
How many buttons?
2.
And what style?
Typical.
Mr. Wick, do enjoy your party.
All right, that is the trailer for John Wick Chapter 2. In this sequel, John, who now has a new dog, is once again ripped back into the criminal underworld he sought to leave behind when a man from his past comes back demanding that he repay a debt that he owed to him. Let's talk about it. One of the best things about John Wick, the original, was this weird world that it created, wherein hitmen can stay at a special hotel and have all kinds of weird rules, and they pay with everything in gold coins. And so, this movie seeks to expand that world and give us more of the bone-breaking, head-splattering action that we come to love from this John Wick series. Let's see how it does. Let's start this time with Michael Snydell.
Well, I didn't obviously get to talk about John Wick 1 on here. So, John Wick is a movie I really, really liked when it came out, and for the exact John Wick is a movie I really liked because not only was it just a excellently crafted action movie, but it was willing to completely ground every aspect, or I shouldn't say ground it, I should say heighten every aspect of the film, from the script to the action to the camera movements, and just like this mythic like history of action movies. And, you know, and so this sequel is kind of great in the sense that even in the opening minutes, we are expanding the mythology of the first one, you know, of us getting more information immediately about the Continental, which was the it's reductive to call it a hotel. It's like a network of hotels / criminal underworld, maybe that's does it justice. But in every way, this just kind of expands the pageantry of the first one, in the sense that like everything in this movie is about performance and grand entrances, and like it's not about, you know, it's not like someone can ever just kill someone. They have to make a grand entrance, and it, you know, it's like a fucking Wong Kar Wai movie at times with the way that it just kind of does these grand gestures. And this is what you want from a sequel in every sense. More characters, more enemies, just an expanded palette on every sense. And so as an action movie, again, and as a movie that's trying to bring like weight to something that we've seen like dozens upon dozens of times, it works. But I also can't help getting past that this is a sequel, and there's something of a I can't say diminishing returns because it's still very good, but there is something lost in this second time, in the sense that we're back, and you know that it's not this you know, lightning in a bottle moment. Like, we know what to expect a little bit more. And even though they've introduced all these interesting characters and they've expanded everything, it just doesn't quite have that same magic that it did for me the first time. But with that said, it's an excellent movie for the most part, and it's pretty. No one else is making action movies like this. Like, this feels singular. Which it's weird that I'm getting on it for again feeling like something new, but it just didn't hit quite as hard this time for me. I'm looking forward to talking about it more though.
All right. Jordan Raup, what did you think of John Wick Chapter 2? And what were your thoughts on the first John Wick?
Sure, yeah. So the first one, I liked to a degree. I would say that the last act kind of gets a little muddy, and just literally visually speaking, and it kind of, I think it starts really interesting and has a really, you know, fascinating action sequences around the second act, and then the last act kind of gets less interesting, and just the setting, the location, the, you know, what they're going for, having it, you know, a more narrow scope as it goes on, kind of was disappointing. But just the mere fact, like, how the movie has kind of lived online, like, you know, in comparing to other action films that have come out since, like, I mean, there's literally nothing last year like that even compares to what John Wick offered, except maybe Johnny Toes 3, which barely even got a release. So, but in terms of like a wide screen, you know, a wide release platform, there's, you know, nothing really compares to this kind of action. And so, yes. And so with the sequel, I feel like they literally, you know, heard those complaints. And I was telling you in person, Brian, but the last act of this film feels like they're like, we need the exact opposite in terms of, you know, the visual style and, you know, with this Hall of Mirrors sequence, which we can talk about. And so that's really exciting, the way they actually took things from the first film and, you know, built on them and or, you know, did things better in certain ways. I will say, if what you loved about the first film is, you know, John Wick's journey, emotional journey, so to speak, I will say this movie is kind of like the inverse in terms of they had little, you know, droppings of what was interesting about the world in the first film. And then the second film kind of expands that greatly. Whereas I feel like John Wick's journey got a little less interesting in this film, just the motivations and things like that, which is why the buildup, I think, here isn't as interesting. There's like, you know, a 45-minute stretch, I think, where, you know, it's just after the, you know, insane action that the film kicks off with right from the start, there's, you know, more plot setting and things like that, that take a little bit more time. And there's not that immediate emotional connection that you have in the beginning of the first film. It's literally, I can, you know, name the exact moment where the film kind of ratchets things up. And then from then on, it was a blast. So, yeah, I mostly enjoyed this. I will say the action's a little less gracefully shot and choreographed this time around, but yeah, it's definitely, you know, I would imagine one of the better action films we'll get this year.
Yeah, I definitely agree. This movie, first of all, John Wick 1 is like great. It's fantastic. Though after a point, it does sort of take the scale down and make things a lot smaller in a way that some people may find to be problematic. I did not, and that's just how I am. But this movie does invert that, and it continues to get bigger and better throughout its run. And it is weird that the first movie is so much about the emotional journey of this character, and this movie doesn't follow that quite as much. There's still some hints as to his past and his life, but this movie is a lot more interested in setting up the world and giving you more of the weird, strange stuff that made the first film more than just an interesting action film, but actually made it the type of thing that people would want more of. Which is good, but it does feel a little weird that the first movie was so bizarrely about this man who just wanted retribution for his morning being interrupted. And this movie kind of gets down to more brass tacks, plot and world building. But with the action the way it is, and the acting the way it is, and the staging and the directing as it is, I mean, there's nothing in this movie that if you liked the first movie, you're not going to like this one. It's like, it's hard to imagine that someone who really liked the first John Wick would look at this one and then say, no, they went too hard, they went too crazy, and there wasn't enough dog-related stuff, so I'm kind of unhappy with it. because I do feel like it fleshes him out as a character, it fleshes out his story, and it fleshes out the world. But without over-explaining things, I left this movie with many questions. But the kind of questions, and this is a strange parallel to draw, but the kind of questions that I had when I was a child and I watched Star Wars for the first time, where I was like, who is this Jabba the Hutt that apparently Han Solo owes money to? And, you know, what are these Jedi, and like what are all these other things that people keep talking about? Like, where did Darth Vader come from? Like, I don't get it. What's happening right now? And so I can't wait for the next movie to learn more. And so in this, I have many of the same or similar questions where I'm like, oh, is that one person really dead or will I see them again? And who is that mysterious man on the rooftop with the pigeons? And, you know, what's with this high table they keep talking about? And now that Sean is here, what does that mean for everything else? And so, you know, I liked it and I left it and I had the perfect amount of A, that was awesome. B, I really like the world that they're building. And C, I can't wait to see more of it. So I think on all levels, John Wick Chapter 2 is as successful of a sequel as you could hope to have, while at the same time still being a very straightforward, fun, invigorating action film.
The more I think about this, guys, I just started thinking about this comparison. And I thought about it when I first saw this, but I feel like this is the difference between Magic Mike and Magic Mike XXL. Okay. And I know that sounds like a relatively strange comparison, but I just wanted to go a little bit into it. One, I'm going to start with the cinematography of all things. So in Magic Mike, as well as in John Wick, you know, there's a lot of like neon lit, you know, a Michael Mann, but especially Hype Williams is what I was especially thinking of, who is, if people aren't familiar, he's a music video director, and he also did a film called Belly, which has a style that was kind of adapted and influenced a lot of different people. But in the same way that Magic Mike and John Wick both kind of adapted those styles, this both sequels, Magic Mike XXL and John Wick 2, are about expanding visually in the sense of it's not that hypnotic claustrophobia as the first one. It's you seeing the full, not the full ensemble, excuse me, the full, you know, like these jungle gyms that they're both going through in the sense of Channing Tatum, you know, literally following set choreography through a large room. Or doing a big routine, and just as John Wick, even more, you know, you see this, you'll see this large room, and then you'll see how it will just be painted with blood, and it's like, there are like legitimate issues I have with like pacing and things like that. But I definitely think that it's a preference thing for some people who like John Wick and some people who like John Wick 2, because they are, in terms of form, feel very different or feel like two different angles on the same idea. And so that's what I guess is pretty interesting about this movie, is the sense that it has that same it has that same soul. Like, it was interesting you were talking about the emotionality is there a little bit less, because like Keanu Reeves like still gives this character like a soulfulness that the rest of the movie doesn't like totally have. Like, he's just such a presence. And I think in John Wick, the reason why you felt that emotion so much is because we hardly ever saw past his shoulders. You know, like, there's so much time where we're up in his headspace. And in this one, you get some room to just kind of watch the firefights just kind of emerge and expand.
I never saw Magic Mike XXL. But from the GIFs that I've seen all over Twitter, I am willing to accept that what you're saying is probably true.
As a huge fan of XXL, I agree, Michael.
I mean, but, okay, go ahead, Jordan.
No, I agree. They both expand their scope in like really interesting ways. Like, there's literally a moment. There was a moment in John Wick 2 where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I want the sequel to be. About halfway through, and then they even expand it further than that. And yeah, it's really rare to see a sequel that doesn't just kind of rehash, you know, what you liked about the original, but actually, like Brian was saying, like, drops little hints throughout the way, but never tries to over-explain anything or, you know, kind of devolve into Matrix sequel to bring this up, Brian, explanations and things like that.
After my wife and I excoriated you in a before we went and saw John Wick.
This is very tied to the Matrix sequel, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the Matrix series. It's from the same, you know, people, in terms of stunt people.
Yeah.
So there you go. And another and a reunion, but no.
But other ways, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Do we want to? I feel like we could get into spoilers.
Yeah, I think we're ready for spoilers. I mean, it's John Wick Chapter 2.
What more do you want?
It is what it claims to be, and yeah, we should get into spoilers to talk about what it does with the world and where we think it may go. So, John Wick Chapter 2, it's out now. I was expecting it to premiere higher this weekend, but I guess when you're a hyper-violent, sure, rated R film coming out on Valentine's Day weekend, losing to the Lego Batman movie and 50 Shades Darker makes some level of sense. It also was in less theaters, and it still made $30.5 million.
Guys, yeah. I'm going to show my bubble here, but on Tuesday at the screening, I was at... I was around... I was around critics, obviously, but then I was around a number of people who were just big fans of the original and were talking about how they were so excited about this, about the chance to see this because their friends hated the first movie. So I don't know how most average people feel about John Wick, but I guess there's quite a few people who really don't like it.
Interesting. Yeah, I've only mostly heard positive things.
Yeah, that's super weird. I don't think I've met a single person who was like, I don't really like John Wick. Like, that's... like
actually, my dad. My dad does not like it because it's too violent, he said.
So that's a problem for him, because this movie... I would say, in terms of gore, this movie is higher. It's still not a lot.
Yeah.
But they definitely had it
higher. It's Raid level.
Yeah, I would say it's
Raid. Not Raid 2, but Raid level.
All right, well, let's get into spoilers for John Wick.
Wait, guys, I'm sorry. One more thing before we get into spoilers.
This
I feel
is
like
pre spoilers. We're not in spoilers yet, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, the one other thing is, I'd say tonally, this is closer to something like Crank than the original. Like, I think this is a lot. It's not lighthearted because it's still, you know, a huge body count, but it is definitely a lot more intentionally funny.
Right, because the first film, again, was like a dark tale of revenge. And in this one, John gets to cut loose a little bit. He gets to be...
He makes jokes.
Yeah. People like want him back. Like, they're like the John Wick that we saw in John Wick 1, I guess, is not the Baba Yaga as he was known. And so this movie is about people like sort of cowing him into becoming the professional monster that he used to be, rather than the unhinged revenge seeking guy that he was in the first film. It's funny that you mentioned Crank. My friends and I once got drunk and watched Crank, and during this time period we had a Twitter account for the house that we lived in. It was called The Wisdom of 52nd Avenue, and there was some real weird stuff on that. But one of the quotes, and I found it and retweeted it today, is when we were talking about Chev Chelios. A friend of mine said, if you try to fight him with guns, it's just like giving him a gun. And this movie is that, like, to the nth degree. So, yes, it is quite awesome. All right, so now are we ready, Michael, for spoilers?
Well, sure, but sorry about that, I guess.
All right,
I'm ready.
So, this movie, it's weird how much lore there is in this, because... like, we didn't really even get into the overarching plot, because I think a lot of the fun is the way that the rules and the allegiances of this world twist in on each other. John Wick gave a marker to someone, which I guess is like swearing a blood IOU, in order to complete the impossible task that the Russians asked him to do so that he could retire. And now, because he's back, and because he killed all those people, the owner of the marker, a fabulously asshole-y Italian man, asked him to go and kill his sister, because his sister is going to take a seat at the high table, which I guess is like the New World Order like shadow government-y Knights of the Round Table, yeah, of the criminal underworld.
It's like where Christoph Waltz sits and James Bond.
Yeah, it's criminal underworld, yeah. Spectre in the John Wick world.
There's definitely some Spectre in here in general.
I would say there's some Skyfall visually. There's some Spectre in terms of like there's just
I meant world building and mythologizing,
yeah. Which is fine. And so he goes and he's going to murder this woman to pay off his marker after this man burns down his house. And I could tell that my wife was worried the dog was going to die again, and the dog does not die. So there's that. The dog is still alive at the end of the movie, which is great. But yeah, I mean, like this world that they're building, like I just have so many questions that like I want answered, but some of them I don't want answered. Like, for instance, it feels like the market for assassins is just saturated. Like, there's way too many assassins to like actually carry out as many assassinations as they seem to want. Like, how many people
that
are getting
fucking park?
How many people are getting murdered every day to sustain the level of assassins that they have employed in this world?
Maybe it's like it used to be like a taxi type system, and now it's like an Uber type system where the sign up is a lot easier.
My other thought was
they're taking anybody these days.
My other thought was like, what if it's like, you know, film critics on the internet? Like, some of them are like the Roger Ebert / John Wick, like respected and well paid. And then some of them are assholes like me who are just like, you know, I'm not going to get the $7 million contract, but maybe I can get the $10 contract for the guy who found out his wife was cheating on him, and I can just murder her. And, you know, I'm just going to scrimp and save, and then maybe one day I'll be like John Wick.
They have been, like we said, they have been rumoring that, like, TV show and spinoff, so I could easily see that kind of thing go down, just because this world is...
Rogue One, a John Wick story.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's fascinating to consider, like, this world, because, and I love the way that it's, like,
aestheticized.
Yeah, that's the one. The way that it's aestheticized, because, like, it's just, like, exactly what I would want a world of secret assassins to be. Like, the marker
that's the moment I was talking about when they, when, you know, the $7 million contract goes out and,
yes.
You know. I was like, yes, this is actually happening.
Because the first part of this movie is kind of slow. Like, he does a stagies-worthy car chase, and then a second stagies-worthy car chase / fight scene, and then he's kind of chilled out. And then he gets this marker, and the marker is super cool, because it's like a gold medal from hell, and... You apparently stab your thumb on a retractable spike on it and press your bloody thumbprint into it. And then once he goes to Rome to kill this woman that he has to kill, he goes to a tailor and an archivist and my favorite, the sommelier, who is an arms dealer. The sommelier, rather than just sticking with wines. And of course, all their talk about guns is with wine terminology.
I was sad he didn't get to say anything really sleazy, though. Peter Serafin. Yeah.
Did you guys like... I was going to bring that up. Do you guys, the way they edit both that sequence and also the sequence when the contract goes out, you know, it's like this, I guess, a chronological, you could say, like, chronological, like, you know, things are happening ahead of time that we're seeing. I thought that worked a lot better for the tailoring and the sommelier and stuff than the actual assassin.
I think that it was a good way to break up the coming to New York multiple assassination attempts. Because I feel like if you had just gone through those chronologically, it would have become repetitive. But having them kind of dice together like that was fun. But I do feel like from a pure understanding standpoint, it worked better with the sommelier and the tailor.
Yeah.
And
We didn't even bring up Common yet, who I think gives the best supporting turn.
Yeah.
As Cassian.
Yeah, the like initial like kind of Western standoff they have when they realize like they're, you know, he's there and they're gonna, you know, fight is amazing. And then I think my favorite moment of the film was when they're silently like sniping each other or with whatever the silence pistol.
Yeah, and like the metro,
which I guess is the lobby. Pass station, which is like gorgeous. And I've lived in New York City and I've never seen that before, so I don't know if it's brand new.
Wait, is like you've never seen two men try to kill each other in a?
Well, I've seen that obviously. That happens on the subway all the time. But the quality of the train station was kind of blew my mind in terms of New York City quality.
Yeah, it was funny because I was like, this cannot be a New York City subway station. I have seen most New York City subway stations, and they are disgusting. But yeah, that's apparently a new one, and it looks very nice.
Jordan, you mentioned, I meant to say, you mentioned Johnny Toe, too, and that was a director I was thinking about a lot during this movie, in the sense of, like, especially with Common's character, in the sense of, like, there is a deliberation to, like, every time that someone shoots a gun. Like, they are not going to do anything to endanger anyone. Like, it is only when you are confronted with the situation where, all right, this is business and now I need to do something. And that's partly like what I like so much about, even more than the Continental, is it's like ethos. It is so refreshing because it's so pragmatic.
Which arguably makes the kind of the final gunshot of the film, I think, all the more effective.
Yeah.
In the Continental.
Hmm. Very true.
Which was like, whoa.
That final gunshot was like, it made me jump. It was...
Yeah, me too.
It was like, oh, shit. Mainly because I feel like for all of his... For all of what John Wick is, like, he never seems unhinged. But at the end of this, like, he truly seems like he's lost something. Like, despite having a dog... that loves him and is apparently very good. He really wants to take out this guy.
There's such a like sense of loneliness and especially that last sequence, which I have complicated the feelings about in general, but like just as he's running through and realizing he has, again, nobody in the world, like it is just interesting how this, I care about this character way more than you would expect.
It's super weird because like he just wanted to get out and he found this woman and then she died of like magical movie cancer and and then his fucking dog gets murdered,
arguably the worst kind of cancer.
Yeah, magic movie cancer. Well, actually it's kind of the greatest because you usually die still looking
never
pretty
curable.
Healthy.
That's true.
You will die, but you will die in a halo of light, and you will usually have someone crying over you.
And you will live on in flashbacks.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So many flashbacks. But, you know, if I could die looking similar to how I look now with someone weeping over me, that's better than I probably will die. So that's a dark, dark statement. Anyway, to go back, Common is great. Do we think he's coming back? Do we think that he's gonna come back from that knife wound and maybe be like Lawrence Fishburne appears to be, which is sort of on John Wick's side?
I mean, there's no telling, is there?
Because I'm of all the movies that people can like do dumb fan theory things about, I think John Wick is the one that I'm most down for because we do have Lawrence Fishburne show up as the Bowery King.
And the Hobo King.
Yeah, his official title is Bowery King, but we all know that he's a Hobo King. And he appears to be the Sultan of a world of ex-Continental assassins who are trying to bring down the Continental, maybe?
So are they all excommunicated, or...
I guess. I don't know if they're all excommunicado, or if they are... just like they've turned their back on it, maybe. But then, like, why wouldn't John do it? Why are they putting what appear to be SIM cards into pigeons? I should note,
yeah,
the pigeons have backpacks. They're not just arbitrarily shoving SIM cards into pigeons.
I don't know about you guys. I kind of thought that we would get some indication that the Continental was potentially corrupt, especially the way that Lawrence Fishburne was set up. So it is... actually a little bit more morally interesting, that the Continental is just doing their job. Like, it's not, you know, they're not, making a virus to, you know, kill the world or some like cartoonishly dumb thing.
They seem to just have an economy that they're trying to keep in like check, and like people
they operate by rules.
Yeah,
that was a great scene where he's like, "Would you know? Would you rather have war or
just give me a gun?"
Yeah, give me a gun. Yeah,
with 7 bullets.
that was pretty awesome. And then that sets up that great scene where you fight him with a gun. It's just like giving him a gun. So we brought up Common. What do we think of Ruby Rose? As apparently her character name was Ares.
Yeah, I mean, I would have rather had Gina Carano in it, but
that's
what are you gonna do?
Not a bad choice. I would love Gina Carano in that role. But
she was fun.
Yeah, Ruby Rose is good. Mike, did you have any thoughts on the Mrs. Rose?
I kind of found her. I'd seen her previously in Orange Is the New Black and found her kind of distracting there, particularly because she's the only one with an Australian accent in that prison, and it's very strange. I actually thought she was really good in this. I think the way, I mean, she does not speak. She is uses sign language for everything, but you know, just I think that character very easily could have toppled over into something sillier, and I think it's kept as a flourish and not overdone.
Right. She is, in my mind, she in this movie is like a great presence. Like every time that she arrives on a scene, it's like, oh shit, what is she gonna do?
Although we should have this talk, because this is definitely related. Around the time John Wick, critics started seeing John Wick 2, I definitely noticed some renewed conversations about subtitles, about stylized subtitles. So in the first one, it bolds certain words, it puts them in different colors.
Yeah.
And this one has even more times when it kind of wants to, when it emphasizes those things. I'm just wondering, did either of you have thoughts about that? Did it bother you?
Well, I did see the conversation online. It was, what was it? I think it was Scott Tobias or someone tweeted about how it's like trying to, what was the exact terminology? It was like, because these are so hyper stylized, it makes audiences weary of just regular films with foreign subtitles, which I think is kind of a ridiculous argument.
I think that's crazy.
For the type of movie this is, it's perfectly fitting, I think.
I don't have a problem with it because, like, it's not the whole movie. I mean, they're doing a thing, and I feel like the movie Night Watch, if anyone remembers that mad crazy film.
Is that the Russian vampire film?
The Bekmambetov?
Yeah. I love Timur Bekmambetov. And second of all,
Have you seen his last three movies, Brian?
I saw Wanted. I don't...
Ben-Hur?
You haven't seen Ben-Hur or Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter?
Oh, wait. I secretly stand up for Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
You should keep doing that in secret.
I did not see Ben-Hur. But no, like in Night Watch, I feel like they had that. They had certain times the words would do something weird, but like most of it was not. Now John Wick, because it doesn't use subtitles a lot, it seems like every time they do, it kind of goes for that, like, cool. But I feel like it makes sense because when I hear these characters speak, I can't imagine them just showing up in normal subtitles because it's such a stylized language and their performances are so stylized. Stylized is a good way to just describe every aspect of this movie. it almost would feel like jarring for the subtitles to be normal.
I completely agree with you, Jordan, that the particular argument about it, alienating people from foreign films or things like that. I agree that argument it's kind of out there. But I do think that there is something. The subtitles is one thing that I think did kind of undermine a certain like somberness that was in the first one for me. And I do think that, I don't know, it's weird to say that I wish this was a little more serious at times, because that is so dangerous to say that it could just, you know, become like every other, you know, Antoine Fuqua action movie or something. But there is something, I think there is something lost a little bit in how stylized this movie is.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I think... No, I'm just going to disagree. I love how stylized this movie is. We're going to talk about it. I think that an over-stylized movie, such as a certain film involving a health spa, which we'll be talking about soon, can involve too much stylization if it doesn't make sense with the movie itself. But this film exists in a world of heightened aesthetics from a character and social standpoint, and so the stylization of it doesn't bother me in that way. You know, there's some things where very clearly a certain thing exists purely to be used in a stylish manner in this movie. They're at a museum called the New York Modern, I think, or the New Sure. Modern New York, and one of the exhibits is Reflections of the Soul, and it's just a giant like maze with shifting walls all made of mirrors. And you know, God bless it, it's awesome, but I think the funniest part of that for me was the fact that as people would enter this exhibit, they would have that annoyingly soothing woman's voice that you always hear in a museum when you enter a special exhibit that fully explains the point of the exhibit. And it, like, I love that they kind of committed to that, but at a certain point, I don't need a proper explanation for why there's a hall of mirrors in this museum. I'll just accept it. But I'm down. I'm down with the over-stylizing of some aspects of this movie.
My tweet to the film, it begins with Buster Keaton and ends with mm-hmm. Orson Welles homage. And you know, it's just hard not to like that.
I think it's just at certain points, especially after that intro, which I don't think I'm quite as gaga about as you two, because I think that it leans into another series that I like quite a bit, but this reminded me of kind of later Fast and Furious territory at certain points, like especially Fast and Furious 6 and Furious 7 in terms of, I mean, it's not like the first one was realistic, but there is something about as you increase that scale and increase that number of characters, I think I just became more aware of how realism factors in here. And there were points in this movie where it was losing me a little bit as it like, it's just weird because I think it does a really good job in keeping it grounded, but I still feel like I'm still worried about, especially this being a second installment of potentially 3 or 4 or whatever it's going to be. I'm just slightly worried the evolution from the first one to this one. I don't really want it to get crazier in the same vein as the Fast series, and I know I just want to say it worried me a little bit.
Yeah, I would say the opening still felt quite contained, considering it was like, it felt like, you know, one small area that this was happening, and just in terms of a character introduction, I thought it worked really well. But I will agree that some of the action, which I kind of said is not as graceful as the first film, like, if it's a little more pre-programmed, like, you know, when certain like headshots are coming, when people are coming around corners and different things like that, where that doesn't really go to the point of it getting bigger. It's just, I think, yes, they do need to kind of maybe switch it up even more next time.
I was going to say, I'm concerned of John Wick turning into a superhero as the main characters in Fast and the Furious are. Because while I'm totally fine with that in the Fast and Furious movies,
sure,
I'm less cool with it here. Because one of the things that's great about him is his humanity and his vulnerability, which is why I'm glad that at some point during each of these movies he has had to get stitched up, and then later on you see that that same wound is still bleeding. And just the fact that at the end of both movies, his face is all fucked up.
Sure.
Now, it's hard for me in a movie like this, in a world like this, because at a certain point he gets a bulletproof suit.
Yes.
Which I was kind of cool with, because
I was cool with that as a joke, but like,
I think, like, it's obviously he's still in peril, because, and this is why I was able, at the end of the day, I've spent far too much thinking about just this suit, by the way. It's a great suit. It's a beautiful looking suit. He gets shot, and in fact, that's what we were talking about with that sort of Wild West thing. It appears that both men were wearing bulletproof suits. And later on in the movie, he holds it up over his face as he has a nearly point-blank shootout with another assassin, which is a little campy, a little cartoony, but what I love then is that then when they get into the gun-fu, I guess is the best way to call it.
Yeah.
You know, the person just slips the gun underneath the suit and shoots him right through the midsection. And while he, yes, still goes on because he is John Wick, it does show, like, he's not wearing, like, Iron Man-style power armor. Like, there are still vulnerabilities. It just allows for... It kind of allows for a world where he's not the only person who's capable of firing a gun correctly. And in a world where you've got super assassins taking up every square foot of New York, you need to have him be able to get shot. But you also can't have him bleeding out in the first 20 minutes. So I think that they struck a good balance there. And I'm curious, now that they've done this thing where they've shown all that he can get with the Continental, now that they've stripped that from him, where they go from there. So I think that they almost built that in as like a hedge against that. They're like, look, we can make this place as cool as we want. Mm-hmm. But we gotta be able to pull it back a bit, because what's essential about John Wick, the reason that I'm so excited about this movie franchise but not like others that just involve people shooting stuff, is John Wick. It's like you said, like, I loved the movie Shoot 'Em Up. I don't need another Shoot 'Em Up. I don't care about Mr. Smith or whatever his name was. I like John Wick. I am curious about this character and the entry point that he gives us to this world. So I think I have some trust in the writers and directors and in Keanu Reeves, who's a big part of this creatively as well as being its star. I do agree with Jordan. I want more switching up in the next movie. Like that scene of them having their silent sniping in the middle of a metro station while everyone else around them is blissfully
It's a very
ignorant.
Different feel.
Yeah. It's super cool. And
but then
I really
enjoyed
that.
Stuff like the catacombs, which is a little bit deadening in how long that scene goes on.
I think that I can't. It's like there's the meat and potatoes, and then there's like the sauce that gives it a bit of a swirl. So like you come to a John Wick film, and the bulk that you have to get through is, and, you know, I say have to get through, but it's more like you're watching a hockey game, and you're just like, yeah, they're just fucking skating around, and they're passing the puck, and that's kind of the corridor. You know, simple gunfight where he shoots someone in the leg and then in the chest and then in the head, which is always great to see. I love it, and I can admire the craft. But what you're really there for is the little grace notes within that. You know, the cute little backwards pass that then sets up the hat trick goal. You know, and so that's what I come to this for. I feel like there's the meat and potatoes, your everyday nonsense of the running and gunning. But then you get those little things, those little unexpected flourishes, and it's a beautiful thing to behold. And I think that if it was too inventive all the time, we might have the opposite thing, where we would say, you know, why don't these people ever just fucking shoot each other? But that's how I feel. Maybe you, Michael, would like a movie that was nothing but weirdly inventive stuff that never repeats itself.
I don't know. I kind of love the stuff where, like, there was definitely someone in my audience right by me who's like, why isn't he shooting him? Shoot him right now. Like, but those moments where it's like, no, they live by this exact thing. And no, it's only when it's time for that moment. Like, I love that scene, for instance, with his sister and the fact that, not with his sister. I should say with Ricardo.
In Italy, right before the shootout. Yeah.
All right, yes. And how she chooses to kill herself instead of choosing to be assassinated. And that's, like, so interesting and just reminds me again that these are real people. And I guess what I really want to talk about, guys, is why is this a second of three movies?
I mean, what do you mean, why is this a second?
You mean you wish there was more, or you wish there wasn't more?
No, I don't wish there was more. I don't know. I just, it's like...
You're going to love the image of John Wick running down the street with a million homeless guys as his army.
No, I did, Jordan. I really did. But
that's going to be the sequel.
A million all the homeless in New York. Yeah. Everyone's saying right now it's such a problem. But what you don't realize.
So escape from New York? Well, not really. Okay.
You don't want? Did you not want a second John Wick? And are you now upset you might get a third?
No, I'm more upset that, like, when we saw Lawrence Fishburne for as short as we did, I'm like, oh shit, this movie's not gonna actually end, is it? Like, it's just, there's something almost overly confident about the way that this movie ends, which is weird to say because I know people love this fucking movie, and
it's a little bit like it's The Empire Strikes Back, you know? As fucking played out as that goddamn analogy is. I mean, it's true. You have a guy. And in the first movie, he could walk out with that dog and we could never see him again and we'd be fine with it. But then in this movie, we get a little more of the world and he has another assignment and he pulls that off. But then it turns out that there's a whole other thing he has to deal with. And he does. And then, you know, there's fallout from that. You know, there is no resolution for John Wick. At the end of the last movie, he finished his revenge, but it turns out that that just brought back specters from his past. And then dealing with those... Sure. Results in him now being like, what, the Kimura has a $14 million bounty on his head and he's alone and he's excommunicado and he's got his trusty dog that has no name. Part of me kept wondering, like, is he not naming that dog because, like, he just is sure that something is going to happen to that
dog? Well, I think that was the implication. Yeah. Well, I think even the way this movie begins is like a stretch in the way that the first one wasn't, in the sense of, you know, him going to get his car. I think I sent this to you, Brian, and I don't totally agree with it, but Simon Abrams wrote a short rebuttal. Or I shouldn't say rebuttal. He wrote a dissenting opinion about John Wick 2, talking about how... its foundational devotion to objects, like, makes it feel less, I guess I should say.
In what way?
I'm paraphrasing.
Right, but, like, in what way does it have a devotion to objects?
For instance, him being so angry about, like, I think there is something about his dog being killed in the first one that same impact is not here. And I'm not saying kill another dog. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But there is still something like that. This motivation feels weaker to me. And there is this weird, Like, I don't know why he has such a connection to this car. Well, I don't know why
Well,
I'm sorry.
I just want to put it out there because, I mean, when he gets the car back to his house, it's beat the shit up, and he pulls out a birthday card that he apparently kept in the dashboard, which was from his wife and has a picture of them in it. So, I mean, there is a deeper non-material reason for him to want this car back.
But there is, like, a weird emphasis on material things in the sense of even the fact that we have, like, 20 minutes of the movie devoted to him doing prep in the Continental, which is cool, but it's also, like, there's just not that human foundation that there was in the first one other than just Keanu's general presence to me.
Well, yeah, no, this movie is definitely a lot more business-oriented, I guess you could call it. I mean, he doesn't have his wife anymore. I kind of respect that they haven't given him, like, another person. Like, it would have been very easy for them to, like, give him a female assassin to be involved with, or, like, an ex-girlfriend or something that's still in the world. But they've kept him alone, and I kind of respect that. Because, like, when the entire point of the last movie is he's all alone, and the one woman that he had is dead, and the dog that she gave him so that he wouldn't have to grieve alone is murdered. It's hard to come back from that and then, like, come up with another emotional reason for him to exist. So by giving him this ironclad rule that he needs to follow, it's a less emotionally involved movie, but I think it's truer to the character. Because it would have pissed me off if this movie opened. It's like, hey, John, remember, like, your ex-girlfriend? Well, she's in trouble. And he's like, uh-oh. And then he has to go save her and fall in love with her, and then she dies or something. Like, that just...
Absolutely.
It feels a lot more honest for the movie to operate this way. And for his whole thing, for, like, the latter half of the movie, is just to fucking kill this guy who's a dick. Like, that seems like a very John Wick thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, as you say it like that, I definitely agree. But it's just there's just something weirdly anticlimactic about the third act in this one for me. And I felt I kind of had similar problems with the third act in the first movie, too. I just think it goes on like maybe 10, 15 minutes too long.
I agree.
But like it was just something so weird to me about how the fact with that gunshot, then it goes on for like 10 more minutes. And it's like, oh, hey, you guys ready for more? Like, there's just something weirdly contradictory to what I expect from John Wick, and something annoying to me that, like, oh, hey, we're going to do a mic drop right at the end right here.
Well, I mean, the whole movie is about you can't get out. Like, you're kind of here, and, like, you know, you thought you were out, you thought you had this whole other life, but now that's gone, and, like, what's going to fill that void? And I think there is an interesting question of, like, how much is it that John Wick is good at this and it's sort of all he can do? And I think that's something that could be interesting to follow up in the next film. Jordan Rapp, do you have any particular opinions about what Mike is saying?
I would say I actually would strongly disagree about the very end. I think it amps it up in a way that's, like, perfectly fitting, especially if you know a third one's coming. I guess if you have problems to begin with that there's a second one and then a third one, then you would have problems with the way this ends, just because it's exactly the opposite of the first one in terms of, isn't the last one he's on the boardwalk with the dog? And then it's, like, the perfect happy ending, whereas this is, like, just the exact opposite, so...
Sure.
I appreciated the way, I mean, we know we're getting a third one. They haven't confirmed it yet. So, but in terms of just setting up for a third one, I think it does it in a really, exciting way I mean, we'll have to see if they actually execute that, and can do it on a bigger scale. That's interesting. But, in terms of getting me excited for a third one, it did its job.
Well, I don't know if it's totally the exact... I would take a little bit of issue with that, Jordan, in the sense of like, I like that first one because it's so bittersweet. And the fact that, you know, he goes to, I guess, spoilers for John Wick 1, that he goes to a shelter and takes a dog out. Like, it's just like him trying to replace this part of his life. And like, on paper, I actually really like how dark this ending is, but there's just something that rubs me the wrong way about the fact that this isn't finished. Maybe it's because fundamentally I don't think John Wick is ever going to be happy. So maybe that's...
maybe that's the point. Maybe that's what the movie's trying to say.
There's just this gnawing sadness.
Exactly. I mean, this is a weird question I want to wrap us up with, but like... Do you buy that he would shoot that guy in there? I mean, like, has he just gotten to that point where, like, there's nothing else in his life and this guy wronged him and he doesn't want him to get away with it, and so he kills him knowing full well what the consequences will be? Like, is he just ready for that to be the rest of his life? Like, now that his wife
maybe Mike has a point. He's so depressed and inside that he's just like, if this will kill me, then I'm going to do it. I'd rather go out in a blaze of glory than retire quietly.
That makes sense. Well, I, for one, am interested to see what John Wick Chapter 3, or the final... Well, it can't be called the final chapter, because that's what the last Resident Evil movie was called.
The Wickening, we already decided.
Yeah, The Wickening. John Wick 3, The Wickening. I'm excited to see what it does, and I'm excited to see this movie again. And, I'm all on board, baby. I'm a Wick head. I'm a Wicker man. I am a John Wicker man, and I'm ready. So that's John Wick Chapter 2. It's out in theaters now. Hopefully we'll learn that it was successful enough that they're going to do a sequel, and we'll get to see.
Yeah, I mean, it made double what the opening film did its opening weekend. So
yeah.
But it was still second behind third behind 50 Shades.
Yeah, but 50 Shades made $500 million worldwide, and Lego Batman's coming off another multi-$100 million grosser. Jesus. So,
jeez, okay.
Yeah,
well. For what it was, I think it did. I think I would assume they're pretty happy with it.
No, for Lionsgate, and is it Sony?
No, it's Summit and Lionsgate.
Okay, well, yeah, for them. I mean, I think that this is pretty great for a rated R action film released on Valentine's Day weekend. I mean, it's doing fine. I don't see this as being a problem for them, and so I hope that we get another one soon.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a disposable action movie at all, so I should be excited about that. I guess I'm just worried about what they're going to do with John Wick in the future.
I am worried for John Wick, because I'll be honest with you guys, I don't see a lot of good ways out of this for him.
No, probably not.
No. Should we make our prediction here that I think Carrie Ann Moss will come in for the third one, and it'll be a true Matrix reunion?
Yeah, would it be a Trinity?
Oh, yes.
Shit. John Wick 3: Trinity, subtitle The Wickening.
She did come to the premiere of this one, so she, you know, she's supporting.
I'm gonna hold out franchise for Joey Pants. I want Joe Pantoliano in there.
Or we'll just get a Matrix Revolutions and find out that Keanu is again the one.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Let's not do that. So John Wick Chapter 2, out in theaters now. Check it out. It is amazing, I think. And Michael said it's an excellent movie that he had some issues with. And Jordan Raup agrees with me more than he does Mike. So that is all for today. Let me remind everyone that we are brought to you by Mubi. Mubi, the streaming online cinema, where every day their curators add another fine film to their selection, and you have 30 days to watch before it disappears into the ether. For your free trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage. And we will give you 30 days of that service for free so that you, too, can understand the wonder that is Mubi. That is, again, mubi.com/filmstage. Next weekend, we will be talking about the newest film from director Gore Verbinski. That is A Cure for Wellness. And my review of that is already up on the site, but if you're interested in seeing it, go check it out, and you can come back and find us here talking about it. In the meantime, let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found. Michael Snydell.
You can find me on Twitter at Snydell, where, oh man, I don't have anything clever again. Damn it.
You got to start writing this shit down, man.
No, I people really, are start really do.
Real lame.
Well, I'm on Twitter at Snydell. Sometimes I say funny things. Most times I say bad things. And
you, sold.
Oh,
sold.
Bad things?
Just things that people
deeply
don't.
Deeply anti-Semitic things.
Oh, no. All right. Anyways, to promote things, John Wick 2 is in theaters. You should also check on Filmstage. They did the 50 best action movies of the new century. There is some good stuff in there. I wrote an entry on Johnny Toes Exiled. There's a bunch of other good shit in there. Brian contributed to it. Jordan contributed to it.
I did a goddamn shit ton of those things.
Yeah, check it out.
Ditto.
All right, Jordan Raup.
Yes, you can find me handing out gold coins on Twitter at JP Raup.
Okay, that's something we didn't talk about. These people are getting paid in money. Where do they get the gold coins from?
What I find so funny about it is that is like the same thing. Like it's the same. It's just one gold coin for anything. Like yeah. No matter what the task is. So
it's like a real system. It's like they get a gold coin for a pint of bourbon, or you could get a beautiful Glock for a gold coin.
Or a body disposed of.
Yeah. It's a little bananas, but I guess that's just the way it is. Or maybe that's just a tip. Like, do you just tip the bartender in a gold coin so that they can get a body disposed of?
Yeah, maybe.
Are the bartenders also good at murdering people?
There's so many questions to be answered in chapter 3.
I'm so excited. This is like when I saw The Raid and I said, like, it's my favorite kind of movie. It's the kind of movie where instead of learning math in school, everyone learned karate. Because, like, no matter who you are or where you are at any given point, you could become just the best karate dude. But anyway.
You know, honestly, I want to know how the bartender knows every single person's drink. Because that's a lot of drinks to remember.
This is true. All right. We'll just have a whole round table where we just talk about the things that we want to know about John Wick, the world therein. I'm Brian Rowan. You can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. You can find my review of Cure for Wellness and all of my writing about the best action films of the last century, or the current century, I guess, at thefilmstage.com. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us, and tune in next week.